meeting to order at 9:35. Could we have a roll call, please?
Andrew Everett.
Here.
Peter Leeds. Jason Madison.
Here.
David Swartz.
Here.
Paul Steron.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Okay, and in looking out, I see no one in attendance as a member of the public, so we can let the minutes reflect that. Item number four is adoption of the November 11th, 2000... wait a sec. The November, it was the November 2018 minutes. And
okay.
November 14th. Let's see, and they were well done, I thought. I thought they're just almost better than I've ever seen over all the years I've been here. You guys are doing a great job.
Kirk rocks.
I'll say Kirk's a rock star on this. I didn't really see anything.
I did not either. So, motion to approve minutes as read.
I'll second.
Okay. It was on the 14th, right?
14th. Okay. November 14th. Okay, so all those in favor of adopting the minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
I'll abstain.
Very good. Motion passes. Item number five is review, discussion, and possible action on all of the following. And item A is update regarding concerns that home builder requirements are preventing home inspectors from inspecting newly built homes. Is that yours, Paul? And
yeah, I guess I'll start and maybe Melissa can come in. You know, I first want to thank the BTR board and specifically Melissa and staff here for their support with this concern, since it does affect not only home inspectors but home buying consumers. So so we made our visit to the Registrar Contractor's office in December, I believe it was, and at least stated our case, and we had the director there, legal counsel, a couple other chief admin people were there, stated our case. They're not really planning on doing anything. They were just trying to get a better understanding, I think, of our concerns. But while they appear to have a level of jurisdiction over licensed contractors, there is they did not feel that they had the real authority and jurisdiction to come down with any edict or recommendations even in the slightest way, and they recommended we pursue it through other means, which you know, which we started to do here a little bit.
Yeah,
so
and we can discuss those other means as this goes on. And you know, it was interesting for me, just as an aside, because I was at the Registrar of Contractors for a year and a half when Mr. Goldwater was the registrar, and he used to do a lot more intervention than the new registrar does. Mm-hmm. Their comment to us, I think Paul and Patty heard, that they're not doing anything unless they're specifically authorized in statute to do it. So, you know, they could reach out to the home builders community on the behalf of our registrants and say, you know, let these guys do their work, but they're not going to do it. So we have asked the AG's office to weigh in on the issue because they represent the registrar and us, so hopefully they might be able to facilitate. I don't know if that's gone anywhere. We haven't followed up or heard from our AG about it, but we can do that, and I know we were going to talk to the realtors, right?
Right, and so we had we collected some information, including some previous information from that Randy West sent down from basically about 10 years ago when Israel Torres was the ROC director, and there was an advisory committee on the ROC, and some of the similar concerns that were detailed by Mr. Eckley in a letter. And some of those concerns are really valid, and frankly, it shows a pattern. It shows a very distinct pattern of increasing restrictions for home inspectors. And It just seems to me that when I started looking at this a little deeper, a lot of this comes back to the contracts, of course, that the builders are utilizing for new home purchases. They do not need to meet the AAR contractual requirements because they're not real estate professionals. And so therefore, there's no requirement for any kind of a period of additional inspections that could take place or additional contingency period. So not only do the home buyers really have very little, if any, rights, but there's no requirement for further investigation within the house, within the home. And the thought is that, I mean, if we needed to pursue like a home buyer's bill of rights, that every home buyer in the state has a right to an inspection and pursue it that way. But one wonders if the builders are at some point required to meet certain requirements within their contract, that then would open the door to a reasonable contingency period for additional inspections, and that might be a way to pursue it. It's just one thought. Sure, I'd like to hear what Scott has to say on the AG side and see if he thinks that this is something that Brnovich may pick up and run with. But so I guess the next step is getting feedback from Scott to see if it makes sense to knock on that door and maybe have a separate meeting there.
No problem.
How are you?
If we can have the minutes reflect it, we have an ultra quorum now, effective about 9:40.
I apologize.
Traffic, sure. Yeah.
The construction.
That's all right. Yeah. We assigned some more work duties to you.
Yeah, you have a lot. Your job just. I don't know if we're allowed, but. Could we ask Mr. Leeds if there are any objections to anything within the prior meeting's minutes?
No, there's not.
Yeah, I didn't see anything either. Okay, neither of us did.
So, Peter, we were just reviewing the new home builder requirements on home inspectors, and that's our current discussion here.
Thank you.
So no feedback from Scott at this point, Melissa, right? And you got what I sent you and the write-up and the background and actually citing some, you know, civil law there, which I don't know that we want to go, but there's some ammunition there.
Right. I mean, the legal feedback we heard there was, well, it's not required in law to have a home inspection prior to, you know, closing on a house.
Right.
So, that's the one sticking point that I think this profession has faced with regard to this issue and several others. So.
Well, and to be fair,
yeah.
Just to put yourself in everybody, to put yourself in their camp is some home inspectors are just flat not qualified.
Oh, absolutely.
To do a new home, especially a pre-drywall,
and they make a mess of it, right?
And they create nightmares for these folks. It is their property, so they have increased liability when anybody steps on their property. So, you know, I think it's an uphill battle. I mean, perhaps, you know, one of the news stations would find it a compelling story and air that, because it really has to be driven by the homeowner or home buyer, I believe, for them to insist on it. And there are provisions in most of their purchase processes where they do allow it. They don't specifically say you may not have one. They just put up the barriers for
right.
us.
Right. If you do this, then you have to meet these requirements.
Right. So this has been going on a very long time. I'm kind of not surprised that we're going to bang up against it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised either, but I think we need to get it out on the table and take it as far as it can go.
Sure.
Would you consider writing an article about it we could put in our newsletter? What do you think?
The answer is yes. I don't know the value of putting it in our BTR newsletter other than soliciting additional feedback from our registrants, which I essentially did last summer, but I'm happy to do again. But I have gotten a fair amount of feedback from the inspectors in the state. I probably need to get that article into the AAR Digest and some of the other...
But realistically, if you think about the potential for one of the home inspectors to have a contact at a news station, or you never know where the potential exists for or getting to the public.
Yeah, and certainly if we were looking for a harmed consumer, that would be another reason to reach out to the inspectors. So I'll tell you what, I will put, I'll put an article together. I'm going to try to put something generic. I'm going to use a fair amount of the information that was in the white paper I put together and kind of massage that and make it a little shorter and sweeter and try to get that out. So I'll commit to doing that within the next few weeks, and I'll get that out to you guys, and I'll also see where else I can sell the article to.
Okay.
Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, and your favorite reporter friends that you have to deal with, would they be interested in the story
They might be. They might be.
Is that Catherine Rieger? Or?
No. I forget his name. Jeremy something or other.
He's has a blog now. He's not a reporter.
Is that a producer?
But maybe the Capital Times.
Maybe the Capital Times would be. We could certainly...
Do we have any feel, Melissa, when we might hear back from Scott on the AG side of this?
You know, that's my fault. We've kept him fairly busy these past few weeks, so I haven't followed up.
And that's okay. With all the legislative activity, that's understandable. And this is kind of a back burner item anyway, but...
he actually has a very large public records request for us. That is taking up all the time.
Sure. Oh, that's
so
fine.
Until that's done, he's probably not going to be able to...
Yeah, and if it's next meeting, that's fine.
Yeah, okay. I think that's probably a fair... And I'm surprised, actually, he didn't do that.
He's CC'd all the packets. Yeah.
He's a little overwhelmed. But
you're starting to trust us as well.
I don't know that trust was ever a problem here, but yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for chasing that down, and
yes,
and we'll continue to stay on that. We can talk about it later, whether we want to keep that on the agenda or how to approach that.
It should be to discuss the article.
Yeah, I would ask that it stay on, please, David. If nothing else, to get Scott's response documented and give me time to get an article out, I guess.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Item number 5B is review of board substantive policy statements, and those are in our packet as statements number 6, 8, and 16.
I included those three because I felt those were the only three that about home inspectors with an agenda does say policy statements. I'm sure you guys.
I think you're exactly right, and the one I don't think applies though is 6, the first one. Unless the agency feels like that language is imperfect in some way, I think that still should exist. All it was is an advisory for something similar to what the agency is looking for in any bond language, if somebody elects to have a bond rather than E&O insurance. And I think that still needs to stay.
So I think this was here because of the rules change that
we took out the third option.
So.
But I believe this one is specific, unless I missed something when I read it the first time. This one specifically just gave guidance, because when we started licensing home inspectors, there were no bonds in existence.
Okay.
So the agency just gave out this to say, okay, bonding companies, this is kind of what we're looking for here. They have it down now, potentially, but if a new one cropped up, a new bonding agency, at least the document still exists or something.
Sure. So. If you guys are still happy with this language and feel that it satisfies your professional responsibilities and needs, I think It's a policy statement, we can keep it.
Yeah, unless there's some kind of legal, you know, input on it. We're not lawyers, but, you know, I don't know if every word is perfect or anything in the legal sense.
Yeah, and it, I don't think it would have to be. It's just a statement.
I think we actually beat this up quite a bit years ago.
Yeah,
to be sure that it was perfect.
Okay, yeah, I think you have.
I don't see that there's anything wrong with it.
So I think that one should remain. That's number six. So the substantive policy statement number eight is about inspector preferred vendor and similar programs. And that was dealing with the fact that our previous rule was so broad. We did have some specific things that had to be cleared up, but now when it comes to actually both 8 and 16, 8 addresses the fact that the realtors are enticing home inspectors to pay money to be part of a program, and then 16 is regarding the fact that home inspectors are in a position where they could scam the public by stating that there's problems with the home and then on the back end make money off the repair. So I think we've fully cleared those two up in rule in the last go around, and so I think these two can come out. That's my opinion, if you guys want to talk about that. Because it should be even more clear now.
So just to be clear, David, so 16 talks about the 24-month to 2-year moratorium on repairs.
Right.
And you're saying we could do away with that because it is now in rule.
It's in rule, which supersedes this.
Right.
Actually, you know, and why have documents that are potentially in conflict
right.
with a word or two? You
right.
know?
We don't need the ambiguity as long as it's all, everything got carried forward in rules and there's no need for it, right?
Yeah, that was... We intended that this day would come, that we're going to take it out, get rid of the substantive policy statements. I wanted to do it last meeting, but I did not have it on the agenda specifically.
And if staff receives a bunch of questions about something, you can write another one.
That's true. That's true, if it's imperfect.
Yeah, if you're getting the same question from a home inspector about one of these things over and over and over again, then... meet again and write a new one.
And actually, that's the idea of codifying it in a rule, is because rule does take precedent over a policy statement. So, you know, obviously, rule has greater value than the policy statement. So.
And that being the case, the mechanics of altering a rule, if we needed to, would be what?
We would have to beg permission from the governor's office, and then if we get it, open a docket at the governor's regulatory review council and panel everyone to.
So it's a pretty big process, unlike changing a substantive policy statement, which we can do at our whim. This kind of locks it in a little more.
Correct.
So we have to feel real good about it.
Well, it's done.
Yeah.
It's in,
yeah.
And it prevails
right.
over this today.
Right, yeah.
So we're just saying...
Get rid of the
get
stuff.
Get rid of these.
The preliminary.
These
hearing.
Were very necessary because our rule was so broad.
Yeah.
You may not pay or receive directly or indirectly a commission as a referral or finder's fee. That's so enormously broad. These are the two issues we really had to focus on, and so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Termites and realtors.
Actually, not termites. This would be like repair of anything at the home.
Yeah, we still have a 24-month moratorium on repairs, right?
Yeah, but termite, in my opinion, would be a different matter because that's a whole other agency that regulates that.
Well, that's what number 16 is talking about, though. Mostly, really, is pest control.
Well, this is going to, we're doing away with this, so you
right.
may not do repairs.
Right.
So, that's what the rule says. Mm-hmm. It doesn't specify pest control at all, the rule now. So then the thoughts are to have a motion to remove or eliminate substantive policy statements number 8 and number 16, if you guys are in agreement.
I If I recall, I believe that you guys wanted to get rid of 8 some time ago, like the last couple of meetings, and then they went to the board and they said to keep it, but they didn't take any action on it.
Right, they didn't take any action. I don't remember why. Was it they felt like it couldn't hurt?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, that was the discussion. There's no harm
really?
In keeping it. Yeah.
Hmm.
What do you think, board members?
Get rid of it.
I mean, we could look at what the rule says, but again, it comes down to legal interpretation, whether we nailed it, you know.
And you should have rules on your laptops in the, mm-hmm. at the top.
Right. Yeah, I see it up there.
Well, I'll
go ahead and I'll go ahead and make the motion to remove substantive policy statements number 8 and 16.
Second for
yeah,
discussion.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And any additional discussion on that? Would the board, I guess, Jason,
comes,
you'd be able
comes
to
up, I'll,
carry the ball on that.
Yeah, I'll talk to everyone about it.
If they really
I'll
have concerns, then we'll mm-hmm. revisit it. I don't mind revisiting it. And I'd actually, I'm kind of sad that Scott's not here mm-hmm. because, you know, having legal review would be cool too. So, anyway, is there any other discussion?
My only... I could only say that they might have wanted to keep it as an interpretation of the rule, as something to fall back on if the rule gets questioned, and then it's pretty clear in the substantive policy statement, so I don't care either way.
Okay, anything else? Okay, all those in favor of the removal of sections or of substantive policy statements number 8 and number 16, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Thank you. All right, very good. Item 5C is update regarding licensure by endorsement proposed legislation in 2019.
So, this is the board-sponsored bill that we brought before you at the last meeting that you made amendments to, and our those amendments were included in the draft bill before it was dropped. Mr. Kavanaugh, who's our sponsor in the House, has been really proactive for us. Ledge Council made a whole bunch of clerical corrections to our statutes, which were kind of scary initially because the bill, which was just about a page and a half, then became like 15 pages long. But because you make a change to a statute or you add a new statute, it's going to have ramifications on the rest of the Practice Act, so that's why Ledge Council weighed in. The bill was heard in Regulatory Affairs, which is a new committee this year, and it passed unanimously, which I was pleased about because a lot of bills are just passing on party lines with the Republican majority. But I'd had the opportunity, thanks to the Democratic caucus actually reaching out to me, to go down, pardon me, and speak to the new Democratic members of the committee about the bill and about the board and the amendments and exceptions that we had, including for home inspectors, in the bill. And I think that went a long way to convincing the Democratic minority in the committee to go ahead and vote for it because they knew it was a board-sponsored bill, that it wasn't going to be challenged by other stakeholders because we'd already vetted it and discussed it as a board and as a committee, and that we were recommending this to facilitate qualified individuals coming to the state and obtaining registration so they could contribute to our economy more quickly. And Mr. Kavanaugh was very supportive when he spoke about the bill at the committee, also saying that because it was a board-sponsored bill, he felt that it was well-researched and vetted, which was great given, you know, previous comments we had heard about boards and commissions from our governor, no less. And it has since passed through rules.
So it's actually gone through the floor and is on its way to the Senate. It's done in the House.
Yes, so.
Is it, which number is that on?
2037, House Bill 2037.
2037.
And so that's really good news for us, and hopefully powers that be will appreciate our efforts. And after our bill dropped, Mr. Peterson's bill that the governor referenced in his State of the State dropped, and that is fairly similar. It's a reciprocity bill, which is essentially the same thing, but it would require a one-year residency requirement for the other professions, whereas ours does not.
Hmm. It's under agenda item F, just to make sure we meet our board meeting.
Oh, okay, right.
So this is something the governor will support. Hopefully, you know, he will sign it if it makes it through the Senate. So,
and our changes are in it?
Yeah, your changes are in it.
The one I'm most concerned with is an example of a report?
Exactly. That's in it, as well as the requirements for all new candidates for certification to be fingerprinted.
And pools and spas.
And pools and spas. Yeah. And the education for pools and spas. Okay.
The extra right. 4 hours.
Right.
Perfect.
So yeah, all the amendments you guys recommended are in the bill.
Good job.
We're pretty excited.
Thank you. Yay. Nice work. Okay, thank you for that report. So that concludes 5C. Item number 5D is review of staff policy for complaint intake. And recall what that references in terms of has anything changed over the year or recently or?
No.
No? So it's on a specific form. Does the alleger always have to complete that form in its entirety and before you'll accept it? Or can they just write a letter and that's?
They could write a letter. I mean, I would say 90% of our complaints come in online through our complaint intake process, through our website. But occasionally we'll get a complaint just by email or a handwritten letter.
Okay.
Yeah, we can't make alleger's complainants jump through too many hoops because we want to be accessible to the public. So we put the complaint form up on the website for convenience, but if they want to call and complain, if they want to email and complain, write a letter, we take it.
And if you take a call, you would just follow the format of the form, right? What they want, blah, blah, blah.
We'd ask that it be documented somehow.
Right.
Put it right.
Yeah, because I read that all the time. The question and then their answer, the question and then their answer. Right. And I think they do a good job.
Are there any areas where the public's confused where the document could exist or could be changed or modified? One thing that comes to mind is, I know the public believes that when they submit a complaint, they're going to run through a process and they're going to be awarded this money, you know what I mean? And I don't know if that could be cleared up in the document or anything like that where, you know, this agency does not award financial, you know, compensation or this and that, just so they're not confused.
Kurt is actually working on our website. It will be a much more user-friendly website. One area will be for consumers. So one of the things we could put there is what to expect and what not to expect with a complaint.
I think that's the biggest one that comes to mind for me. People surely believe that the BTR is going to say, okay, hand them a check for $10,000.
Right. Have one of those now.
Yeah.
They're coming.
I mean, and that's the challenge I think all of the regulatory boards face, because our statute just says restitution. So people think that means, because they watch Law and Order and all these other things, you know, legal shows, they think, oh, restitution means my damages. Well, no, it doesn't. It means the actual cost, in our opinion, the actual cost of the home inspection, and we aren't here to award damages, treble damages, and whatever. So I think
I'd hate to see that come out. It's a lot of fun to read it. I want $20,000. You know, we all do.
Right, right, and you know, the Registrar of Contractors has the recovery fund, which does allow for some amount of damages to come out.
Well, home inspectors have E&O insurance.
Right.
I mean, if homeowner feels strongly, file a case against the home inspector's insurance.
Right.
Yeah, there's
that's
no
what it's
question.
For.
And there's no question it exists.
Well. Right.
But, yeah, there you go.
But that's not in this forum, so...
Right.
Right, and it's not,
I'm not sure
I'd really
encourage them to run to the E&O provider. Please don't.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Please don't put that.
Right, and I don't think the board should be directing people how to do that.
But I think just the confusion regarding whether they're going to get their damages awarded is...
Well, and I think we try to make it apparent to the complainants when we're processing these things that they're not going to be getting damages. They're going to be getting maybe the cost of the home inspection back.
Okay.
You know, so
good.
It's that we are providing that notice to them, but everybody gets their hopes up anyways.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
So the only screening at the time of intake of a complaint is just simply jurisdiction. We're in the right place for your complaint. Is it against a home inspector in our case?
Right.
And besides that, there's no additional screening for appropriateness or venue or anything else. In other words, if the complaint was, the home inspector said a bad word or something like that, or you know, obviously you don't get into, well, did it meet the standards or not at time of call intake, but is there any other screening that you put on it other than jurisdictional?
It's you know, number one, jurisdiction, as you mentioned, evidence that a home inspection, as defined in statute, is taken place by evidence of the home inspection report. We do request and require that before
okay.
the complaint. But when it comes to whether or not technically this is a good complaint,
right, yeah, the integrity of it, I understand. I just didn't know if there was any other filters you put on it other than there was a home inspection that took place, and it was, we believe it was by a licensed registrant, although you still accept a complaint from an unlicensed, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Don't we also look at, would it be a violation of TRUE? There's no point investigating something that, even if TRUE, wouldn't be a violation.
Yeah, and we do get complaints sometimes against roofing people. Mm-hmm. We don't have jurisdiction over roofers or contractors, so you know, we don't open those complaints up, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Great.
If it's something that's not within the Practice Act whatsoever, and that's the only complaint, then we're comfortable not opening up that case.
Would you mind just taking me through just the next step then? You've had the intake, you've opened up a number, if you will. What's your next step, if you will?
Once a case is opened up and assigned to an investigator, the investigator will then, within 3 to 5 days, send notice to both the alleger and the respondent that the investigation has commenced, and to the respondent specifically what the allegations are against him or her, and ask them to respond with some type of explanation. We ask them to go through the checklist supplement to identify in the report where things exist if he feels that's the case. Provide a complete copy of the home inspection report and the inspection agreement. So we're looking for that collateral information to come in from the respondent. And obviously the contact information for the investigator so that questions can be addressed to the appropriate person.
Is there any information to the registrant when that notice goes out saying, okay, maybe these are your rights, number one, number two, your whole report's on the table. Is there any information there to help guide them as far as the scope of the investigation and their rights? Just throwing that out. I don't know if it's needed, but I'm just asking the question, I guess.
Rights?
Well, yeah.
In other words, they have a right. If there's an EAC, they could bring an attorney if they wanted to, which we've had. I mean, that is a right that they have for representation.
Yeah.
When you get to that stage,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. Not initially, because
okay.
we don't know where this complaint's going
right.
to
be. Right, okay. Okay.
I thought I had read that the website will have or does have capacity to list the complaints or the history
orders.
Of each, but it's not considered for the website until it's...
Completed,
and they have been found to have failed to meet the standards.
Correct.
Okay, very good.
Disciplinary actions.
Right.
So allegations don't make their way.
Allegations are not on the website, just disciplinary action that the board has imposed as a result of the whole process.
But the allegations are a public record, and the law says we have to have a message on our website to let people know to call to get that information.
Yeah, so, like, for instance, if the complaint came in against you, we would have to say there was an allegation against, you know, your Advantage Home Inspection, or you personally, and it was dismissed,
verbally,
or...
If asked verbally?
Right.
It doesn't exist on the website.
Right.
And what exists on the website, is it already in existence, or is it... This can come up later, too, if this is problematic, but... does it exist now, or is it coming soon to, for those complaints?
The board orders?
The final disposition
the details.
To exist on the website?
Is
that a coming soon or
yes.
now?
Currently, the website looks like this, where it's just a PDF of a disciplinary action from the last board meeting. You would click on it, and it shows you this. This will be changing, hopefully this week, to a search engine, much like the registrant search, where... let's see if I have a... Pardon me if I go into my email and search for that.
As far as their rights go, David, I believe they're all in rules. If you go into the rules, they spell it out exactly how to work through this system. Both the alleger and the respondent, I believe.
Okay. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's where our whole enforcement process is explained.
Yeah, everything's in rule.
Right. Okay,
I keep reading it.
So will this have unsubstantiated allegations on it? Or just those that were substantiated?
Disciplinary action.
Okay. But besides having disciplinary action, it will have the substantiated allegations that caused the discipline.
Yes.
Right, okay.
That's what, yeah.
Okay.
This will be it when it's completed. You'll be able to search, and then it'll bring up the case number, the licensee of the firm, and the non-registrant, when it closed, the discipline, and then the legal document would be like their board order or consent agreement.
So now we don't vote on each item as being substantiated or not substantiated. It's did they fail to meet the standards?
You guys, we're way off the agenda.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay.
Certainly we can.
I think it comes up later, actually, but if not... Okay, very good. Let's not deal with that. We can bring it up at a later... We may want to, actually.
I'm channeling Scott.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah.
So
I need to understand that, too, so please hit that again.
So we'll come up with some wording for that.
I didn't have any other questions on the complaint intake, though, if that's where we're at.
Yep, we were on D. 5D.
Okay. All right, 5D. I think we don't have anything else on that, do we? Very good. Let's move on to 5E, which is consider mandating that an EAC committee be comprised of at least one committee member from the area in which the home inspection took place if the home inspection occurred in a rural area. This could be real brief. I put that on. And the word mandating, I may have used that, but it's quite strong. It's recommended, and only because I think Peter and I did one that was, you know, cabins up north, and the approach is just very different. If you had three Phoenix home inspectors, the knowledge base to pull that off, it just gets compromised.
It does. That cabin would have fallen down according to our standards down here, however, it's a cabin. But on the other hand, if staff could just try, you know,
and they do.
And
they
get
do.
And get as close as possible to the violation area with at least one person, that would
be just helpful for perspective, I think.
Yeah. Do we know if our staff person tried?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, our EAC committee is mostly driven by availability.
That's true.
It is.
But now I'm like a North person guy, and it happened to be a North person, or North specific house, so it worked out fine. It's just...
So in the rule book, you just need to put David Schwartz, North person.
No, let's go...
well, but the standards are the standards. I mean, it really shouldn't matter. I mean, I understand there might be a little bit of interpretation, but still, you know, condition and, you know, what the two things, you know, is it there and what's the condition of it? Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same. I mean, it's, you know.
It really is the same, except what's common and what's not common. For sags in the floor that were undersized, the home inspector will say they're undersized. On the other hand, he might add a comment that that's common because they all these cabins in this neck of the woods are under, floor joists are undersized. I mean, things like that.
I don't know. I mean, if I was providing a report up there, I would just mention, you know, floor sags, get an engineer's report or get someone else to look at it. Because if you're making an opinion saying, well, all of them are this way and someone falls through, you know, what's your defense going to be? Oh, well, all of them are, I mean, believe me, I've looked at a lot of cabins up north and they are crap.
They're all crap, yeah. No.
So I understand it, but, you know, you know, so
it should still get a full blown
exactly, and the homeowner should make the decision. It should be their decision,
right?
You know, do I want to live in a cabin that is meets the standard that it should, or am I going to accept living in a cabin that was built with logs used as foundations, which I've seen? Mm-hmm. You know, it's really their choice. As a home inspector, it's your responsibility. The way I feel is to tell them this isn't proper, or, you know, this isn't comply with building code or whatever. It's their decision to accept it or not accept it. I don't know if there's really, I mean, I get having someone from another jurisdiction, but I don't know if it really should affect disciplinary actions or anything like that, because the standard is the standard.
The circumstance was, though, that, like, if you're a Phoenix home inspector or potentially even Tucson home inspector, you have potentially very little understanding of crawl spaces and those types of conditions. And what exists out there is foundation repair contractors. I actually just kind of studied this a little recently, and there's maybe three or four in existence, and they will blow these things into being, you know, I don't think anything's under 20 grand, you know, and it's like we're talking about something that's not discernible by walking through it. Home inspector can't pull it off, you know. Doors work, you know, everybody's wheezing that a floor is 1 to 2 inches out on a cabin, you know, that's 35 years old. You know, you got to have somebody in that EAC that can circle the wagons and say, that's actually awesome. that's a good foundation.
Yeah, and that kind of gets back to part of our job, even though it's not necessarily in the SOPs, is to denote what's common or typical for the type or era of construction.
Versus actionable. Like,
right.
The foundation's failing. It just, we didn't have any evidence of failure or real problems. It most likely moved in the very beginning a little bit, and we're done. It's 35 years old.
So I think we're still at a best effort scenario.
Yeah,
if we can pull someone in from the locality,
it just brings perspective that Phoenix guys won't have.
But Jason, to address your issue, the home inspection is where that should be addressed, not really in the EAC.
Right.
But the home inspector, if he's in an area where he has undersized floor joists in every building in the whole neighborhood, that should be noted in the home inspection report. You know, this is common, however, it doesn't meet current standards or whatever.
Right, and something like that.
Right, I understand, you know, that the home inspector still should be addressing the issue, even though it is common, he should be telling people.
Right.
And I'm in agreement with that.
Well, and I don't see any harm in having inspectors at the EAC say, this is what the standards say, and maybe it's slightly different in a rural area or with a cabin, but... you know, and ask the home inspector who wrote the report to comment on that, because they really should be held to the same standards. It's a statewide standard.
I have to be.
And common sense from EAC members is to say, okay, you know, it's a rural area, it's an old cabin, but why didn't you do this?
Right, but we know that our standard of care varies between Flagstaff and Phoenix.
And beyond that, right. Like what comes up in the AC is these foundation guys come in and they do a floor level survey, and it's like, well, that's cool, you guys did it, but we don't. That's not our scope.
That's true, but we
didn't know it's 1 to 2 inches out even.
But in the EAC, we can call that technically exhaustive and say that this information is really not evidence. Okay,
right.
It's beyond the scope of the home inspection, and we did do that. That's the way to handle it. But to have people familiar with the area is always a blessing.
Yeah. Okay. So that was just that's all that item was about. Any other discussion on that? Probably not.
Nope.
Item 5F is legislative bills.
Yes.
HB 2231, HB 2569, and HB 2146.
Yes. And
plethora.
Not to steal Patty's thunder, because she is the guru of legislation here. 2231 was seriously concerning to me, and Patty actually went and testified at the committee meetings for this particular bill. It's a weird bill because it looks like it talks about what the committee of reference at the legislature has to consider when an agency is up for sunset.
Mm.
But then there's all this language added by the Institute for Justice about, presumptions and what should happen if agencies are sunsetted. There's going to be this government certification, government registration created by whom we don't know, and we don't know what to expect from any of this. So. And it relates to us non-health professions. So we went down and basically wrote a position statement that we handed out to the committees. And then Patty said, let's get exempted from this because we can't be deregulated and we shouldn't be deregulated. And who's going to do this government certification and what is that? So.
Sure. I mean, the important thing to know is this doesn't deregulate anything now.
Right.
If it went through, nothing would happen. What it does do is at sunset create these two worrisome statuses, government registration, government certification, but they don't mean anything. Credentials aren't checked. Competence isn't checked. So it's almost better if they deregulate it to just deregulate than create this
weird
name that gives a false sense of security. There were a number of Republicans who at the committee said that they weren't comfortable with the way it was written and they wanted to see amendments. But in caucus, that turned around completely and nobody spoke against it.
Yep.
We've met with staff about exempting our professions. There's part of the bill that essentially recognizes that if a profession has to have credentials in order to say practice safely and skillfully, that it doesn't belong being given one of these other statuses. So we're trying to argue that if the bill itself recognizes that if you have to have certain credentials, you shouldn't be a government registration or a government certification, then why don't you just take them out? But I don't know how successful that's going to be.
Yeah, we haven't heard of
it.
Well,
a government certification means form and fee?
That's about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what Patty's talking about is the back half of that statute proposes, the last page where it says use of title. There's a paragraph B which talks about government certification is not synonymous with occupational license and does not reflect credentials such as those used for medical board or held by a CPA. So why not say by certified home inspector or professional registered engineer,
Except Title 32, Chapter
right.
One.
Right. Exempt us from it. So that's what we've talked to the policy leaders about, but we don't know if that's going anywhere.
And remember, it has to make it through the Senate where it basically peter out and die if these questions aren't answered.
And I guess we can go and talk to the Senate policy people about our concerns as well.
Yeah.
But it
did move, it was passed, so.
Through the House?
Yeah. I don't know if it's been to the floor yet.
Went through caucus, I haven't looked today to see if it's scheduled for the floor yet.
Do you know what the vote was?
This is a party lines Republican majority, so, yeah.
Okay.
But we do know from watching the various committee meetings that the Democrats read the memo that we sent out.
That's encouraging.
Does Ashley still have a lobbyist?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, in D.C. only.
No.
No, we have Rory.
Well, we do have Rory, that's true, but it's just not Ashley.
But our funding is limited, so she's for the DEFCON 5 type problems,
right.
So.
It's just important. Yeah, the engineers are out there lobbying to get exempted. The architects are out there lobbying to get exempted. You know, we're concerned that all of our groups get exempted, but we're the only ones out there lobbying for all the groups. So that is the danger. Some professions could get taken out, some could be left in. If you're not really worried about you're going to get deregulated at sunset, then, you know, you don't really need to.
When is the next sunset? Do we know?
Oh, it's a ways. We got 8 years back in 2016, so 2024.
2024.
Yeah.
And you could have the real estate.
Yeah, we could jump on it. Folks
are not going to let you be there, right?
Right, and they spoke against the bill as well.
Oh, good.
So,
I figure there's time.
The exemptions or requests are pending.
Yes.
Even though it made it through the House, it's going to the Senate now. Yes. At what point do the exemptions get taken a look at?
Well, we would hope that it'd be introduced on the floor at the House, but we haven't seen anything.
Right, and no one's called to confirm. So chances are we're going to have to go over to the Senate once it passes the House floor and start all over talking to their policy people about this bill, and hopefully someone will see the wisdom of exempting us from it, or maybe the whole bill will die, I don't know. But the Republican who sponsored it, Mr. Kern, is talking it up as a sunset bill and holding agencies responsible, and this isn't deregulating anyone. It's a really good bill. This is what he says over and over, to give the legislative committees of reference more guidance about how to question us out of control boards and commissions. And so, and that's not a bad thing, and we say that up front. You know, we're happy to be held responsible. Tell us what you want to know, and we will answer all your questions and do what you want. We want to be transparent and effective regulators. But then to stick all this in without understanding the repercussions and unintended negative consequences, as Patty says, I think is irresponsible and, frankly, naive.
Seems like it's an incentive to stay regulated.
I have a stupid question. In plain English, is this set up for just sunsetting boards? And it's telling us what they're going to do with the registrants?
It's sunset and what their options would be.
And what the options for the registrants would be?
Right. Yeah.
And when it says, A, on receiving initial and continuing approval from the government, an individual may use the title government certified or state certified. This is what they want to do.
Yeah.
And then a non-certified individual may perform the lawful occupation for compensation, but just not say that he's government or state certified.
Correct.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
All right, well, so yeah, you can either pay the government, give them money to say I'm certified
and
do a job, or not give the government money and still do the same job.
Many of us home inspectors really don't need the state certification to get work. I mean, we have reputations that have been for 20 to 30 years here. So this is pretty ridiculous in my opinion. In common,
If
they sunset us, then we're free. Then I'm for it. Sunset us, we'll all be free.
You're funny.
We'll go to the Bahamas for a while.
Yep, go to the Bahamas.
If you could just let us know if you do decide to attend a Senate committee hearing, so that, you know, if one of us is available, we can maybe jump in there if it's appropriate.
Well, it was the realtors that got us certified. Yeah, we could bring all the realtors with us.
Well,
I mean, this would—I can't imagine this not hitting a stone wall. with just the industry itself.
The realtors are there, and they did talk about the home inspectors.
Good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I don't think it's a big concern.
I think you gave me wind of this, and I forwarded it to Nicole, so she was brief.
Good.
Well enough.
Yeah, I'm sure we did. That's been our...
Do you do that as well? You forward those to, say, Nicole or Tom?
Well, I know Patty called you and...
Yeah,
oh, okay. Is that the process? You wouldn't directly...
Sometimes we do. Like, I've called League of Cities and Towns and the County Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
They may or may not agree, but I have reached out and said, especially on the next one, which is waiver of licensure and certification for contracts under $6,000, House Bill 2146.
Before you move to that... Can we talk about D on this one, the very last sentence that says an individual may use the title certified as allowed by a private organization that grants private certification?
Uh-huh.
And above that, an occupation for which a license is required, it's illegal, but if you're certified, you can use private certification. Home inspectors are certified. We've always used the term certification and license
interchangeable. Yeah.
Okay, and this doesn't.
No,
this could be something very
well. This is again what the Institute for Justice is talking about. They think licensure is the most restrictive. Certification is kind of more free flowing for them.
Really?
So yeah, they talk about.
Well, maybe we ought to start talking about getting our certification changed to a license. Haven't we talked about this before?
You are a license.
We are a license.
I mean,
right?
We just use a different word, but you're a license.
Right,
yeah,
but
I
the
mean,
word
it
might
the
become
language,
important if this thing goes
yeah,
through.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. They're really trying to change the game by redefining what has been long-term synonyms.
Mm-hmm.
Certification, licensure, mm-hmm. registration, they're all three pretty much synonymous. In the grown-up world of regulation,
mm-hmm.
But now,
you are under. You would fall under the occupational license. They're just using words that don't necessarily make that much sense to everybody else. But all of our folks fall under the occupational license. The other certifications, they would be something that's not licensed. So yeah, I don't think you have to worry too much that people would confuse the certification with not licensed.
Yeah, like the National Association of Hair Braiders, if they exist, that's a association versus a regulatory board.
Mm-hmm.
So the Institute for Justice likes them and wants them to be able to just hand out certificates. And
yeah, I see that.
So
keep in mind that this does nothing to our Practice Act.
Yeah,
our Practice Act is intact. So as long as our Practice Act says you have to be licensed. You have to be
alive,
right?
All right. And this would only happen to us if they sunsetted us, right?
Correct.
Okay,
which
so we'll
they
write.
Shouldn't.
We'll
and there's
write,
some years in between to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll
to
write
deal.
Anti-sunsetting letters right now.
I don't view this one as an emergency right now.
Right.
We'll just pray for it to die.
Yeah. Okay, so the next bill, 2146. It's a concern for you, in my opinion, because it exempts people from working with licensed individuals if you have a contract that does not exceed $6,000 per year. This was actually introduced last year and it died, but it's back.
And the important wording in it has to do with, and it has to be primarily done electronically,
mm-hmm.
Which is still a little worrisome for home inspectors. Somebody could say, I'm making a contract and I'm just going to do a video of a home and file a report electronically. So, you know, it may be more of a concern for us.
Well, our reports are electronic.
True.
But there's no way the inspection can be.
Right. Although someone might, we might get a complaint.
Substantially delivered by electronic.
We might get a complaint against somebody who used Google Maps or something to look up, you know, someone's roof and property and say, well, you know, it was electronic, I could do it.
I think we can make a case for every one of these, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, actually. This one doesn't scare me.
It does not?
No.
Why?
It says, a registration or otherwise organization to act for the purposes of the contract, if all of the following apply, the subject of the contract is substantially delivered electronically, the contract specifies the laws that are waived, the subject of the contract is lawful, the waiver does not materially affect the third party, we can say it does. The waiver does not clearly harm or damage public health or safety, we can say it does, you know. So
this sounds like it's specific for somebody's industry, right? We just don't know what it is.
Yeah, they're trying to get to somebody, right?
Why don't they just put it in?
They did try to pass it last year, and I think it failed because healthcare was in it, and everybody realizes you can't do this for healthcare.
Has anyone given an example of, no?
Yeah, but he's right. It probably has to do with something in particular.
Yeah, it says it doesn't apply to healthcare.
See, that's probably Rory. She's involved in fighting these kinds of things off, I think.
She may have more background than we do. So, the engineers and the architects are being exempted from this bill. There's going to be an amendment.
But they're not in here yet?
I don't think we have the amendment attached. It probably went through.
I don't see them in here yet.
I'm thinking it, well, although it says it has to be all electronic. I don't know. I mean, I'm not quite sure what this would be for. I think maybe it's going to be for contractors, but it can't be for that.
I think it's financial. It's focusing on financial advisors, that kind of thing. From my listening to the caucus and the meetings, I think people essentially want to be able to set up taking somebody's money and investing that without going through the appropriate channels. That's a lot of what I've heard discussed.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's broad, it could impact anybody.
Right. You wouldn't think that would be a safe thing to do.
So,
although if it passes, I might have a new profession. Give me your money.
So if there's an amendment to exempt architects and engineers, why wouldn't it just be all licensees under this board?
We did talk to legislative staff and asked to have that considered.
Okay.
But it's not there yet. We have seen the amendment with the engineers and the architects. But as I said, they are actively out there with their lobbyists.
And they forget that we're a consolidated board.
Yeah.
So.
But they've already, the sponsors already agreed to the architecture and engineer.
And where is this bill now?
I was waiting to go to the floor. I think it's either on today or tomorrow, I believe.
Of the House?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't remember, it might have had another committee and then the floor. I have to go back and look.
Do those people over there read these things?
They can't. If you really consider what they have to go through, I can't even imagine that job. It's shocking.
I'm watching about 12 bills, and I'm having a hard time keeping them all straight in my head.
I question whether the sponsors even understand the bills as they put their names on. I mean, to be completely honest.
They're like doing favors for each, you know, you supported me. And
right. I listened to the caucus, the Republican caucus on 2231, with Kern, the sponsor, telling everybody, it's a great bill, it's just about sunset. What about all this other crap in it?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the third bill in here is Mr. Peterson's bill, 2569, which is his version of endorsement. It's his version of our bill, basically. But our bill is better.
The big difference is his is 1 year's experience, ours is 5 years.
That's right.
And you have to live here, right?
Right. Yeah. And you have to live here.
A year.
Doesn't have the home inspector or the state-specific land surveyor exam.
Nope.
So worst case, if this made it and ours did not,
home inspectors would still need to be fingerprinted, but we couldn't mandate the one report. My argument, however, is our bill will pass, and our bill is more specific to our profession, so it would take precedent over this.
Good.
the one-year moratorium doesn't seem to make sense. If you're looking for reciprocity, you move from one state to the next, you want to hit the ground running, not sit and twiddle your thumbs for a year. It just doesn't make sense.
Right. Especially where you see they stuck it in under the military spouse thing. Military spouses. So you got to wait a year before you can...
It's about the time you get your deployment and you
right.
have to yeah. move out.
Wherever.
Right. Yeah.
But
I mean, is there any chance that both these bills could pass?
Yeah.
Even though they're basically conflicting right. each other.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Yep. Really?
Yep. And again, legally, a more specific bill takes precedent, a more specific statute takes precedent over a more general statute. Mm-hmm. Ours is specific to our profession, so legally, in my opinion, it should take precedent over a more generic one.
However, this one says, notwithstanding any other law, what does that mean? Anyway, whatever it is,
we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Does this one require... This is not specifically home inspection.
No, this is everybody.
Right, and therefore they won't be talking about... is there anything in here that says... that would require them to follow the board rule of presenting a report?
No.
Well, this is not nearly as good as ours.
Oh, ours is much better.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is the one that the governor made reference to in his State of the State. Pass Mr. Peterson's bill.
Oh.
And those boards and commissions are bullies and prunes.
He refers to it though as a universal license, and this is not nearly as scary as a universal license.
Are some, maybe some are. I don't get all that. Okay, awesome. Anything else on these three bills?
No.
Is there anything else pending that looks
the
scary?
Low voltage fencing. What's the name of that?
No, you didn't put it on me.
I didn't.
But this will likely survive this. We're probably also going to talk about what's going to remain on the agenda. So going forward, could we, instead of listing the bills, maybe I'll request that we just all bills affecting
report.
This agency or something.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we had legal counsel. We need to list the bills.
Okay, then
we
do you know the...
We used to do a lump sum and we got a...
Just so I don't forget, do you know the bill number on that? If there's...
And you could always go look at it, too.
This is for...
1448.
HB?
South
SB. What?
1448.
Okay, so I just want that for, so I don't forget, and I'll probably be asking for that on the future agenda.
Got one time.
What's the name of the firm?
Low Voltage.
Something?
Low Voltage Electric Fencing.
The one company that it's for.
We're not going to go there. We're off the agenda of this.
2041? That's another one?
Yeah.
Is that SB or HB?
It's an HB 2031. So this was the apprenticeships. Now, you and I traded some emails on it.
That was early on.
Now, maybe this died in committee. I don't know. HB 2031 regarding apprenticeships and licensing authorities.
We can't go there. It's not agendized.
Mm. Okay.
But don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
okay. I'll take that as a don't worry about it.
You don't need to worry about it.
Okay, super.
I'll tell you later.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for all that updating and information and for handling our chores.
It's scaring the daylights out of
us. I know. Do they have to get together every year? Can't they just do it every other year? Okay. Item number 5G is parallel inspection provider listing and standard reports, and this is more of a... I had this put on here just to give you an update of where everything's at. Arizona ASHI has taken it.
You liked what I did, huh?
Hmm?
You liked what I did to that form.
Definitely.
Holy mackerel. I didn't know. You ignored me, so I figured it didn't fly.
Arizona ASHI, the organization that is prominent for home inspectors, has taken it upon themselves, a local chapter, to list prominently folks that are willing and meet the requirements of providing parallel inspection supervision. And so I received information last week, and this is in flux and on an upward trend, but there are 51 folks listed. So we are not hurting any longer. Nobody can say that there's no available parallel supervising inspectors. And we're the organization is also focused on trying to reach folks in the smaller communities, so we have just as much reach as possible. So that should do a couple things, drop the cost, because now there's real competition and postings on, really it's free, you don't have to pay to be on this list. And then there was a standard report that I had developed quite a while ago, just it's something that's philosophical for me was that it's hard enough for the people going to get their license to just understand what the requirements are of the standards. So this document here would address only the items in the standards, just to hammer it home that you must get all these as a minimum, period. And you know, if we had to really get down to it, it doesn't necessarily qualify them to compete. But the goal of this agency is not to help them compete with others, because most of us in the business exceed these by far. So this document here is perhaps a standard report that, you know, the chapter has it, Arizona ASHI has it to give out, and that kind of thing. So it can be, as long as this agency kind of has an understanding, or if filled out fully, it tends to make its way through the process without any reoccurring problems. If it has reoccurring problems, we can always update it and just let me know. But as far as the folks who review them, like Peter does a lot of them, and Peter was involved in the process of refining this. So we think this is a good solution for now, but if things crop up, let's go ahead and address it, and we'll revise this potential standard report.
So that report would be on the AZ ASHI website or the BTR?
Well, no, the BTR has their own right now.
AISI owns it.
Yeah, and that's me. I just developed it initially, and so that's, I just put that on there when I was first doing it. But Arizona ASHI can hand it out. They don't, I don't think it's posted. And it's...
I don't think it's on the site, right?
There's another one up there
okay. That
walks them through what's required in the standards.
Okay.
But that's not to say that we don't want to discourage people, or we don't want to make this appear even that it's required. Mm-hmm. Because the best would actually be if they wanted to go get software, develop a report, submit that. That's probably best. But
But this actually can get them certified. If they were to follow this form and fill it out completely, and it came across my desk in an application as a home inspection parallel inspection, I would approve.
Its chances are...
It's going to meet
the standards is the goal.
It's the bare minimum. It's too basic to get you any business, but on the other hand, it meets the standard, and it's a good place to start. I'm all for this. I kind of like it.
I think it'll be helpful when we go before GIRC to say it's not such a hard thing to find parallel inspectors with 5 years.
Yeah, it'll be great.
And they're growing every week.
How many we got?
He's getting calls all the time. Right. Hey, I'm not on there.
Well, good. Next call, right. Pull my name off.
So that's good news. That worked out. And then it also addresses the comment about how 5 years is onerous. Well, not really. I mean, I've heard more about people wanting that drop to like 2 years as a I've been a multi-inspector firm for 28 years or something. I've watched people develop. two-year in the business home inspectors should not be training others. Like, that's a blanket statement that is
We need to explain that to GIRC, so I think what ASHI has done here will be very helpful.
Yeah, there's a lot of different counties in there, too, right, all the small counties, so...
And also because, you know, our friend Mr. Smith has supposedly been rallying his troops to say 5 years is onerous, so...
That's all right. I'll fight that. I'll stand up and just talk
we'll
until
come
they throw
to those
me
meetings.
Out.
We'll go to those meetings. And beyond that, this is actually getting revised all the time because there's people on there that believe that they needed to just list one county they'll serve. And so we're kind of circling back to go, well, you're so close to this one, will you also go there? So we start to expand that reach and not be just simply committed to one. We'll list them more than one area, and that they're going to want that. You know, that's a blessing to them. So.
Dave Schwartz from the north, right?
No, I don't want to do those. I don't like parallels.
Thank you.
But yeah, so this is just a report on that for the most part. I don't know that there's any reason to keep it on. Probably not, but I'll question it. So then, is there any other questions on that? Item number 5H is non-compliant home inspection report distribution. And this comes from, I tend to get calls, you know, with people questioning what's going on here or there, and I'm like some sort of point of contact. But what goes on is like they call them iBuyers now. And this is
iBuyers?
Yeah, and it's, I guess, internet buyers of homes are like the OfferPad and Opendoor and Zillow now. Mm-hmm. And so what started to come up is they are promoting, providing the potential buy, they own homes once they buy them, and then when they're going to market those homes, and of course they want to sell them, is to promote a free
pre-listing inspection.
Free inspection document, and it's not actually compliant. There's no reference to who did it, and so it's hard to really go have a chat with them. So anyway, I don't know. My hope was to get to speak to an executive at Zillow, and you know, I tried my best. Once I heard about it, I tried my best to reach whoever I could, but I didn't make direct calls. And then I just wanted to give them a heads up that, you know, this may not comply with the state. So just be aware. And so I was thinking potentially down the road Scott could get involved, but at this point, what they've done is they've modified it a bit. What they were using, at least one of them, was using words like inspection summary. And then when you read it, it really it's a marketing piece is what it is. So I checked it the other day, actually, and they changed it a bit to say free home condition summary.
Were you able to open that summary? Because I couldn't get into the summary.
Yeah, they have a different process. You can go online and get it, and I tried the other day, and I still haven't received it.
Yeah, they wanted me to register, and that's the last thing I wanted to do.
So I don't know if there's any precedent for it, but I guess I'll just keep seeing if I can see anything, and if I can't reach them to say, let me help you clean it up so it is you're doing the right thing. If I strike out, then does the agency have precedent for either you as executive director folks or even AG's office folks say, not be punitive, you know, just go with a heads up that this kind of has some conflict and, you know.
Like to write a letter.
I don't see that as a problem, really, because I think anybody can say anything they want about a house, but if the complaint came into here that someone bought the house on a pre-listing inspection from Zillow, assuming it was a real inspection, then we have a case, and then we could talk about it.
Right.
But until that happens, I don't see that there's any pull that we have.
No, I don't. Uh-huh. I don't want to hit a goal. I just want to give them a heads up. We gave it our all to.
Right. But from what I'm understanding is that those summary inspections are so vague that for you to go in and say, "Hey, I can help you clean this up," you're going to add 4 pages to their summary inspection, and they're not going to buy that. You know, it's a, like you said, it's a marketing tool. I don't think they're pushing them as a home inspection per se. At least that's not the impression I was getting.
Well, but it says inspection report on there.
Yeah, but
so one could, the layperson could easily infer that, oh, I have an inspection report here.
Right.
And now we have potentially an unlicensed person providing that,
right,
where we do have jurisdiction.
But not until a complaint comes in.
Right.
You don't even know who to complain against. They don't even put their name on it.
Well, what,
so there's no option.
But eventually someone
to defer. But there's no option to address it and try and get it straight.
Right.
If it proliferates, then where are we? You know, then everybody can be doing this.
Well, there'll be a lot of complaints at that point.
So this
against
really
who?
Against the person, against Zillow, if nothing else, because they're passing something off as a home inspection. You know, I mean, eventually, anyone can complain against anybody.
Yeah.
And eventually, it'll show up as a complaint if it's a problem. I don't see how we can preempt it. I don't see how we can go in ahead of time and tell them how to conduct their business.
Right, but I mean,
I would think an AG, you know, with the proper letterhead, I think it would be just a heads up. Here's the rules. Send them, direct them to the rules and all that. And
I'll second a motion to ask the AG to send all the Zillow and these other...
I don't think it's time now, but...
A letter to give them a heads up, but I don't see that we have anything that we can do unless a complaint comes in. And there's somebody that the complaint is against.
Right. I realize we can't act until a complaint. Has there ever been a time where a committee member has said, okay, I'll file a complaint so we can get the ball rolling on looking at this? I'm sure I'm not the first one to ask that.
And you can't. Anybody can.
Right. Anybody can. And you don't have to be, it doesn't matter who, but I mean, if we ever needed to dig down further on this, this is a little concerning to me because we're only going to see more of this. Mm-hmm. There's only more, going to be more iBuyers, and mm-hmm. the realtors are starting to run scared on this because who needs a human to buy a house? I can just do it all myself online with my phone. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be more of this stuff, I think, floating around by the Trulias and the Zillows and the Redfins or wherever else, and things are going to be presented as inspection reports. So mm-hmm. I think it's just something we got to keep an eye on. I don't know if we can, you know, take specific action on Zillow here, but...
If we could get our hands on something that looks like half a home inspection, then we can complain against that.
Well, that's kind of what David's got here on that.
Yeah, but he said it was really a marketing piece, and I couldn't even get into the darn thing. What do you think?
Yeah, but it sounds like it's a national kind of thing, like Zillow. Is there not national home inspection group or national realtor groups that might be more appropriate to reach out to them? Because it's not really just a state issue.
Right.
Well, that's an inspection.
But every state's different, as we know. And
yeah, and I actually worked for Open Door for a while and OfferPad for a while. We did some of their work. And what happens is home inspections cost money, and once number crunchers, you know, they started with home inspectors involved, and then they also have to involve people who are going to assess the decision and make decisions on what gets fixed as they rehab a home and prep it for sale. And so what a lot of them tend to do over time, they can start with a home inspector, but they'll eventually seemingly cut them out, and then they go to their contractor who's going to come in and give them bids for the rehab and the new granite in the kitchen, and they're going to say, you know, create a report. And then, so these often are done by it's not good for the consumer to be confused with the document. So... I think it's worth monitoring, and like I said, I've taken calls on it. So with other concerned home inspectors, so we'll just keep an eye on it. And
has anybody lost a job because of one of these? That, you know, as a home inspector?
No idea.
This is the type of stuff that made the realtors press for our certification.
Oh yeah, okay. Exactly.
So I don't think the realtors are going to be very happy with this. And
well, they don't like them anyway.
The agenda's next one, right. Electronic iBuyer.
It's going to be
report discussion. because I didn't know what this was. Non-compliant.
Okay, I have a question. If we don't have a home inspector per se, but we have a village that's passing off things as a home as a home inspector, okay? Can we bring them into this board, into complaint, under complaint? Can we file a complaint against Zillow for doing home inspections unlicensed?
Anybody can file a complaint against anybody.
I just wouldn't be punitive up front. I would rather issue something from the AG's office or from this office and say...
Would the board file a complaint?
No, would the board, if somebody filed a complaint and brought it here against Zillow for doing home inspections unlicensed, would the board entertain them?
So we'd have to talk to the AG's office,
I guess. Yeah, okay. Because that would be one way. Because that is pretty cool.
It does take me back to that waiver.
I would say this is a home inspection.
It looks and smells like it, doesn't it?
That waiver bill.
I mean, it'd be one thing if they just said, you know, things like interior was painted and there's new appliances.
Yeah.
But then they go, everything's in working order. Same thing with the electrical system. You know, they could say this is a 200 amp panel, but then they go on to say it's all in working order.
Right.
Oh yeah.
And all they need is some lettering right at the top. This is not an home inspection report, not meant to comply with the
state
standards. You know, kind of.
They kind of try, but anyway. Okay, so. This is just kind of a heads up that I've taken calls on this, and so we'll kind of keep an eye on it and see where it goes. So I don't think there's any action required on that. And the next one is 5I, which is InterNACHI classes for licensing education. And that one
is... Dave, before we move on, can we keep H on the agenda?
Yeah.
To hear what Scott has to say?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
So the InterNACHI classes for licensing education, I think I've taken calls on this one too, I know, and it's regarding InterNACHI promoting that they offer free training to get your license in Arizona now, which it's not actually free. You have to join the association. So, but for whatever it's worth, it's just... I don't know how important it is going back to the spirit and how the statute was assembled versus, you know, technicalities and wording, which prevails there. But when we wrote the statute, I was heavily involved in that. And the way it was intended was that they either had to go through the educational facility or provider had to go through the Department of Private Postsecondary Education. Or if you're online delivery or correspondence courses by mail, you must go through this Distance Education Council, and it just changed names, and we revised our rules to reflect that. And then we had that in the beginning, and then I was told, whoa, you got to also add in the Department of Education, because if ASU or a community college wanted to fire up a course, they're automatically, they have to be in there. You have to put them in. Mm-hmm. So anyway, now 20-something years later, what InterNACHI found was that the Department of Education actually seemingly endorses some of these accrediting agencies, and the one that they were already approved by was the Renewal Education, Renewal Our Education Provider Accrediting Agency. So they're coming in under that one to be a provider for initial education. And so, but, you know, you can argue both sides of this. They are approved then under the Department of Education. And then you could also argue that, well, but you're under a specific category of renewal hours, and this state does not require renewal hours. So this is... You know, I got the calls, but this is your baby to kind of sort out, I think. You know, I don't know if you want us to chime in, but that's legal people's drill, I believe. I just want to inform you, you know, I've taken calls, people are bringing it up, and so you guys, I wanted to give you as much information as I could about how to make your decisions in that.
Rob and I talked about it. I don't think he's seen any of these come through.
It's pretty darn new.
I must have emailed Brick. I emailed somebody back about it, but yeah.
Well, I went in and took the exam. Yeah, it's not a bad exam, but my fear, okay?
Did you pass?
You had to go there. Good job.
I got a couple wrong, but I contested those.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, contested those.
I don't agree. EBPHI. When I went to EBPHI, I went to Chicago 2 or 3 times, I forget, okay, to write this exam.
Right.
One of the rules was that once you sat on that board, you cannot teach that exam. Now, I found in the website here at NACHI that these guys are affiliated with EBPHI, and then they're teaching people how to pass the exam. So I want to clarify that.
Okay.
You're the latest one to be with EBPHI.
Right.
They would not let us teach. Okay.
Well,
after we beat that exam up, we couldn't teach it.
Okay. So EBPHI has revised their rules of conflict to say that if you are now EBPHI, the board has grown and there's different committees within the board, and so if you were on the SME committee that is privy to the item bank, i.e. the 200 questions on the exam, mm-hmm. then you are not able to teach that type of class, mm-hmm. because that would obviously be a conflict and you'd be privy to too much information. Other than that, if you were on another function within the exam board, mm-hmm. Then you're still allowed to teach.
Okay.
And once you come off the board, then you can do what you want.
Really?
Yes. Just to be clear on that.
Not really. Oop. This is all about the NACHI classes licensing education, and from their website, NACHI's website, they brought up this EBPHI certification stuff.
Can we put it back on next agenda?
Oh, okay, we can
do that. You're quite the channeler of Scott.
I've had many long discussions.
Anyway, can't talk about it.
The other thing I didn't bring up is just a concern that, to my knowledge, they wouldn't have a class right now that would address our standards of practice, and actually the largest source of our complaints are failure to understand and comply with the standards of practice. So that's my immediate thought, but they could certainly produce a class that met that. And then really we get back to the issue of whether the legal folks in the AG's office believes that this is a working program or not. Okay.
In the meantime, yeah, Robin, we'll keep an eye out to see if one comes through so we have a better look at what is in the general world.
I'm not sure that was the intent of the statute, the way it was written, to allow for this.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I don't think this course currently qualifies people for registration.
For what reason?
We need to see one, essentially.
Yeah,
we can run it by Scott.
Well, it's advertised as helping you pass the national exam.
Right.
Pretty much. That's what it's advertised.
No, they promoted
it as...
Are they advertised
as getting certified?
Mm-hmm. They promoted, approved in Arizona.
Yeah, I did see that.
Remember that one provider of education that we kind of had Peter take the whole course? We made him take the whole course?
Technically are, I believe.
I passed that one, too. and the ones I got wrong, I contested.
Melissa, do you remember that one provider of education that was seemingly not super professional or whatever? We made Peter
That's right. You took the class.
I took the whole thing.
Three hours or something.
Oh, was it really?
It was electronic.
It was, who were they?
I don't remember.
I can't remember.
Some online...
I think they pulled out of Arizona.
They did.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think...
It was in Sonoran Desert.
I think in Arnachi, I'm quite certain they have a pool and spa class, so that would not be a concern, if just for the record. I'm pretty sure they have a pool and spa class. I'm a member of, like, ASHI and... InterNACHI both, so I see their stuff.
Okay.
But we don't know that the pool and spa module is within their certification that they're offering.
But
we don't know that it is.
NACHI and InterNACHI follow their own standard. You're not following the state.
That's where I'm concerned is the standard.
No, what the wording says, or by an accrediting agency approved by the United States Department of Education. That's the language you're concerned about, right?
It's pretty broad.
And however, the one that is specific to that they're coming in under, if you go to the Department of Education's website, it's the accrediting agency for renewal education or something like that.
Not
so it's for
right.
So it's for continuing education.
Right.
Is that what it's all about?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I read something where they had asked a question of the agency and they actually possess a letter from or an email from Patty. They posted that, I thought.
Yeah, they made an inquiry to me and I told them they would have to meet the requirements in law.
That's how I read it.
You or you don't. These are the requirements in law you have to meet.
The other thing is they are approved in a lot of states. It's just, you know, our state has what it has, and whether it's worded adequately to have them go through that distance education council.
It could be if it's accredited, but it doesn't meet the other requirements in law, then, I mean, it's kind of like you have to meet them all. You can't just meet one thing. So that's kind of what we don't have is the content, I guess.
We don't approve the content.
Right.
So anyway, we can keep an eye out for it, and we can write it by Scott. And if we can see something that's more specific to what's in the content, and does it meet or not meet the rest of the law, that would be an issue. It's not, you know, it doesn't say you only have to do one of these things. It says you have to do all of these things.
Yeah, there's no way it's going to refer to the Arizona Standards of Practice for home inspectors. There's no way.
Right.
It's going to be just nationally generic.
Right.
So just focusing in on how the standards of practice and the understanding of those is really our problem area. It's our chronic problem. And in a lot of cases, I believe, or some cases in EACs, they're required to take additional education hours for standards of practice. If a outside group were to produce a class on that was delivered electronically, must they be approved for initial education to also provide that EAC punitive type of education?
I don't think so.
That's a good
really?
Question.
Yeah, I don't think so. There are a lot of classes I think we refer people to for refreshers or just standalone classes that we don't require they be approved for initial
okay.
licensure.
That's good to know.
The law also doesn't say that the subject matter has to meet Arizona standards. It just gives a list of topics.
But it says something about professional practice.
It says professional practice, but it doesn't say Arizona standards. Yeah.
Professional practice in Arizona,
that's a definition
the
right there, right?
Practice.
We'll run it by Scott.
Okay.
So then maybe just
keep it on for next time, huh?
Okay. All right, now the very best part.
Oh, I know.
I thought you weren't going to be here with your...
I know.
Okay, so... I told you I've been talking to the governor's office a lot about legislation and budget and IT issues and all the rest. So I made a second request for them to reconsider giving us money for our IT issues to get our data cleaned and migrated and prepared for our eventual move to the Salesforce statewide e-licensing platform. And I did get a response from Matt Gress, who's the head of OSPB, who said he'd think about it. Yeah. So that's what the whole budget remark is about there.
I like your negotiating. You asked for 150 and he asked for taking away 100.
Right.
So,
right?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So that was of concern to me and my head exploded. And, Anyway, I wrote to the governor about that and said, what concerns me is they're giving $665,000 to the medical board to AGL Solutions, the vendor that failed us for an e-licensing system, and yet they're taking away 100 grand and then not giving us the 150 we asked for. And I quoted fundamental fairness and said that, to me, they were favoring one agency over another, that if everyone was to use Salesforce, then that 665,000 that went to the medical board should be given to Salesforce rather than to GL Solutions. And no one responded to me on that, except OSPB did call me, or SPO, and said, well, whatever, we're not letting you sue GL Solutions. So, yeah. So I haven't recovered yet from that, and my head explodes every time I think about it. But anyway, on to the GIRC petition. Peter has kindly volunteered to come and tell GIRC why the 5 years is really important. GIRC may not agree, and they may send our rule back to us and say amend it.
They'll agree.
Yeah, I hope they will, and that's why Peter's coming.
If it gets amended, is that a chance to do anything else, or simply that matter has to be addressed?
That matter has to be addressed, and I
we could probably open up.
Yeah.
Really? I don't know if there's anything. It just kind of dawned on me.
I don't know, but that matter would have to be specifically addressed. I don't know if we would need to request permission and go through the whole process, or if they amend it somehow for us to fix whatever they may think we need to fix, but hopefully we won't have to go there. We filed quite a lengthy response to Mr. Smith, including all the times the bill was up for review and discussion, and specifically noted the time that this committee entertained a request from Mr. Smith to talk about his concerns about the rule last April, and he did not appear in front of this committee. So,
I believe I heard or read or something that the folks in his, this is about him making money with his school, and I thought I'd heard that they've already, those people affected now meet the 5 year.
All the inspectors now are 5 year certified.
So he doesn't just drop it?
Apparently he has not. I don't know. He has not communicated with us, and he may come to the March 26th study committee, which is really where we'll get to hear their questions and concerns, and then what happens on April 5th is more or less just a vote.
I can't imagine that his people all have 5 years. We've only been fighting this battle for less than a year. And if he had three out of five of his people didn't meet the five-year requirement less than a year ago, by now, I mean, he should have just kept his mouth shut for a while. You know what I'm saying? I don't understand. I don't think that they have. I think he's probably got people that are still less than 5 years.
And when he came, was he here or before the board?
He came before the board.
And the board.
He just didn't understand how the process, I mean, he thought that the board was going to rule and all of a sudden it was just going to change automatically that day. We tried to explain to him, this is a, you have to do this, then you have to do this, then it's going to go back to this, and you have to redo the, then it has to go to the legislature, and then, it's like all this stuff, it's like, it's not, we tried to tell him, whatever we rule today, it's not going to take effect even close to today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He just didn't. He just thought we could just wave our magic wand and it was gone.
All I know is that I've sat next to him and defended this twice in front of the board, once in this committee, and I'll do it again in front of GIRC.
Thank you.
And then I'll do it in front of the governor.
Okay, good.
And then I'll do it in front of the president.
Right. The thing about this particular petition is it's really his burden, in my opinion, to demonstrate that our rule is burdensome on applicants. I don't think he can meet that. He's complaining about it affecting his business.
Yeah, the rule was burdensome on him.
On him.
Right. And I think that's the tack to take when you're in front of GIRC. It's like, this rule isn't for you to make money.
Right.
It's to protect
the
applicants.
Right. So that's what I've said, but who knows how they're going to...
And now there's a website listing 51 boats.
Right,
so
exactly. That's super helpful. Yeah. I'm going to say, look what the association has done, because it's not just the board, it's the industry.
Yeah.
you know, the board's rule mirrors what the industry really felt was an important standard to help people meet the standards in Arizona and conduct home inspections appropriately.
And there's 51 on there today. You might want to keep checking it every week and say, you know, and we're adding, you know, one or two every single week. You know, by the time March comes around, you might have another 10 or 12 on there.
That's
so
true.
Well, based on the governor's concerns, I mean, there is concern that his business is affected from, you know, other people's perspective. And it's a concern, too, that if it is unreasonable, let's talk about it. But, you know, whatever number you pick, you're not going to make everyone happy.
Right.
And we're talking about a supervisor that's training these guys. If somebody's going to float 2 years, to me, there is no way. I would argue that to the end of the
age. Well, that's the issue, is why is the 5-year the magic number? And, you know, I think the committee and you guys did a really good job explaining that there's such a variety of homes and issues and, you know, concerns with whether it's roofing or plumbing or whatever it happens to be, that you need to see so many different homes and do so many inspections that you can really only get that from 5 years of full-time home inspections.
Especially when
we
just have 30. We only have 30 chances with the guy.
Right.
Which is not many that we argued back in 2001.
We wanted 100.
Right.
But that's 5 years is a norm. It's a norm across everything. If you're going to a company and you want to get vested, you got to be there 5 years before you can start with your profit share. I mean, it just goes on and on and on with 5 years. Nobody wants to believe anybody knows anything unless they've been there 5 years. Not only that, I just read an article that says that our brains don't develop until we're 28 years old, which means I want anyone less than 28 out of the voting range. All right? We need to bring our votes up to 28.
Okay. Okay. Luckily, we're all
stray.
Of age here.
We made it.
Yeah.
So no home inspector is in the business until they're 28 years old.
Yeah, we'll put that in statute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
We had our 5-year rules review report due. I submitted that in January, just explaining we had actually just revised all our rules. So hopefully they won't have any questions about that, but if they do, I will let you know.
Okay.
The computer status here at the agency is changing quite a bit. We have Kurt and Rob to thank for that. Kurt has taken it upon himself to rework our website to make it more user-friendly, which means he's been learning Drupal on his own and recoding our website.
No,
so,
way to go.
But I thought you might like to see a little of what Kurt has done. So we were ordered to put all our board orders up on the website, which we have wanted to do, and one of the things we wanted GL Solutions to help us with. So that is up.
It's two separate projects. So this is the redesign that I'm doing, and this is the disciplinary actions that they're creating. I've asked him to reorganize this and some other things. It's not quite done, but it's getting pretty close. He said they're hoping this week it'll be finished, but you should be able to search a disciplinary action by the case number, the individual, the firm, when it was closed, their discipline, things like that. And it's going to be directly attached to the individual. So, for instance, I put, here's a firm, Amazon Security. You click on that. It's going to slow this this test that they're having here. He's being very slow. What's supposed to happen, though, is that these link to the actual individual or to the firm itself. If you search for the firm or you search for the individual, the registrant in the system, it will show the disciplinary action. So this is an actual firm, and this is on the test site, so this can't be seen by the public. So there's all the firm information, but if you scroll down, it also lists any disciplinary actions with them. So if somebody in the public were to search for somebody, they would automatically see that connection. And they allow us, they can go get more information about the case, look at the actual board order consent agreement, because that's the law needs to be, that we have to upload all those. So it should be very intuitive and, you know, meet their standards. The redesign that I'm doing, I just asked the asset team, can you guys please redesign the website? And they're like, no, but you more certainly can if you would like. Here's a way to do it simply. And they showed me, and I was like, well, okay, that was actually pretty simple. Let me just try to do that myself. And they created this redesigned site for me to start playing around with it. And when I say I like it and I'm done, they can try to move it up the way. So the difference here, as you can see, we're going to have an about in the meetings, and laws and standards don't really change. But now I rename these four applicants, four registrants, for the public. In our current site, you have enforcement, resources, yeah, licensing and exams. You don't quite know where to go for anything,
right,
at all.
Awesome.
So with this one, it don't drop down quite yet, but mm-hmm, just once.
Great.
And this will be ready before Alejandro's Ina Road exit opens back up, so I'm quite happy about it.
Well, you got plenty of time for that.
So even though we weren't successful with GL Solutions, we will have more functionality, hopefully by the end of March anyway, in terms of having the ability for the public to renew, or for you guys to renew your registrations online and pay with credit cards.
Right.
And to let the public search for the disciplinary actions, which is a big thing for us, because that's really what agencies should be doing, is providing correct information about what they do in terms of licensing and then enforcing the laws against those who are violating them. And we'll be able to do that now, even though we don't have GL Solutions, even though we don't have the ability to make all of that happen without a lot of back-end work, which is really what the licensing system would have done in terms of automating all that info. So you'll get to renew online and pay with a credit card, but then that info comes to our staff as spreadsheets that need to be manually uploaded into our system versus the immediate electronic processing of that if we had had e-licensing. So, but outwardly it will look like we're more functional, and inside we will be more, we'll be busy.
That sounds like a security risk too, higher security risk with that.
With
data, credit card.
Well, the credit cards are actually being processed through Bank of America, which is the state portal. So the credit card information is just as secure, and our staff won't get that info. What they'll get is, you know, Peter Leeds, Dave Schwartz, renewed on such and such date, and they're good for a year, and then, you know, all of that. So that's the info that our staff will be inputting, not any of the credit card payment info.
So coming soon, maybe even end of March?
Yes.
Some change.
Right. So website update, board orders online, and online renewals and credit cards.
By end of March?
We're hoping,
wow,
please.
That's good.
You know. Yeah. We are actually meeting with Asset, our asset liaison, this afternoon to create a scope of work to see who else we can get online to help us fix our data, cleanse our data, and prepare it. Our contract with IT partners who helped us migrate off GL Solutions and had started that process has ended. We're having arguments about how much to pay them and how to pay them, because we did not sign appropriate documents or something at state procurement's request. So we don't know how that's going to happen yet, but that's a lot of fun. But now we need a new company to help us with that, and it really has to happen before we can go to Salesforce, because that's the second migration, and it would be a mess. So anyway, and then I did get an email about a potential replacement for JMAT.
Well, I thought it was that he had changed his mind. He wants to
stay forever.
Perpetual.
JMAT's staying forever. but I haven't heard, and I have not received any documentation about whether those two individuals have been appointed by the governor. So the one that would replace JMAT is an environmental engineer, not a structural, which...
And since we have so many environmental complaints, zero,
well,
doesn't make
the
any
water,
sense.
I'm sure the governor's looking for the water issues, and Anyway...
Still have no complaints on environmental.
Both these gentlemen are in good standing, have practiced here for any number of years. The environmental works for Maricopa County and does water stuff, so... Really, that's it for my report. Unless you have questions about the numbers, I think you can see here that in licensing, we have we got 4 new apps and 64 people renewed. There are 857 home inspectors active as of February 8th, and 523 home inspection firms. And you guys now make up over half of our enforcement actions.
The problem
winning.
Children.
Winning! Yes, you are. So...
We don't want to, but...
I know.
You keep in mind that people that aren't even our clients complain. Some sellers are mad that...
You guys have probably the most public-facing profession that this board regulates. Right. Land surveyors, too, but... But you guys for sure, and so.
On the disciplinary action search, real quick, if a complaint was not substantiated, would it still show up in that database?
It has to be a closed case. With
it can be closed and not substantiated.
It has to be a disciplinary action.
So there has to be an action taken.
Right.
If
it was dismissed, it won't show up in there, right?
No, okay. Literally have to manually put in every single disciplinary action. I'm not going to upload a list and
write
in. I have to do every single one.
Great. Thanks for clarifying that.
Do you want to add anything to the report, Rob, Doug?
No.
There you have it.
All right. Good news.
Making friends and influencing people.
I noticed you had 20 non-registrant cases.
Yes.
What's the percentage of those as home inspectors?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Usually doesn't come up.
Does that mean practicing without a license?
Yeah.
I bet a lot of those are home inspectors.
No, not really. Mostly engineers.
Really?
And architects.
And architects.
Surveyors, it's a lot of architects.
Sometimes surveyors.
Well, they're just drafters. But I'm an architect.
Oh, interesting. Well, we used to do more of the sting-type behaviors when others were running everything. I think they'd get wind that something's going on, one way or another.
Yeah.
Nobody's feeding you guys any information about home inspector types.
Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've got to roll off.
Okay, well, you're going to miss nothing, so thank you very much for being with us on the phone, and we certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I didn't know you were still there.
You're so quiet.
I forgot to.
No.
So is that all?
Yes, unless you have questions.
Is there
gentlemen.
Any questions? For
I have none.
Melissa? I have none.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. And I actually got everything onto the agenda. Was a good boy. You're very happy, I'm sure, Patty, that I have nothing to report. committee chairman's report, I have nothing. And then future agenda items. It looks like we want
5A.
5A. 5F is in Frank.
5G. No, no.
5H.
5F, 5H, and 5I.
And 5I. And then also one that reads something like, why did we want this on? Substantiated allegations, website posting, maybe just to review it again, how that all looks, or review of complaint posting format, or I don't know.
The disciplinary action site that you just looked at.
It wasn't specifically me, but I think it's a good idea just to take a look at it. I mean, we've gotten a glimpse of it here. But
it's not finished yet. You would like to see it, it's finished.
Maybe so.
Review of website improvements.
Okay.
Maybe that covers everything. Yeah. Yeah. Patty can't yell at us saying, oh, no, no.
Well, then we're guaranteed,
somebody has to
we're guaranteed to forget what we wanted.
I also have SB1448. HB2031 from Earth.
That's F. Yeah, so all of 5F. Okay. All of 5H and all of 5I.
And we did 5H reworded as electronic iBuyer home inspections. So I was asked to re...
It really isn't...
to give you a new title.
It isn't specific to iBuyer type deals.
No, it's reports not meeting standards.
So keep it as is.
I think so.
Okay. You also, there was something else. Out of my head. There was something else you wanted, and it was in my head, and now it's gone. I'll try to remember it.
I was writing it down. 5A.
Yeah. Right. Still in.
5A.
Oh, GERC.
GERC.
Report on the GERC meeting.
Oh, yeah. Process.
Oh, yes. Peter.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah, okay.
GERC meeting update or something. GERC can do his magic and word it perfectly like he does.
Well, that'll be a simple report.
All right. So
it'll be either yes, we got it, or no, I had to blow the building up.
Listen, Peter, arrested, dragged out of chains.
Well, I wouldn't surprise
home inspector.
Really.
Yeah, we all see that.
Two of the most volatile individuals at the board.
Are we concerned that, given the legislative session, that we would want to meet next month, or do we want to do our usual 2 months out?
It's not till the end of March, so I can't report on GERC until April.
Was it the end of March?
Yeah, March 26th.
Oh, you're right.
Yep.
So we'd go... Maybe we should do a little earlier than normal in April, though.
Well, we can't do it before the 5th, because then we won't know what their conclusions are.
Okay. Right. So say the 9th?
9th.
How about the 9th?
4-9?
4-9. How does that look for everyone?
So far...
So I'm going to put it in for 4-9...
That should work for you, right, J-Mad? You'll still be on the board.
If I'm still there, I'll be here.
Thank you.
They want to take you off the board, too? Not just this committee? Yeah. It's time to rotate you there, sir?
Trying to kick me off the board.
Right.
How do you get that rotation?
The governor.
Get kicked off?
Yeah.
The governor?
Do you just have to yell at the wrong person? Or?
His term was over.
Just had to be here long enough.
2 years ago. He's officially our longest serving board member.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's because we
ever.
We like him a
we
lot.
We love him.
Iron Man Award. Good job.
So listen, the 9th was okay then, huh?
Yeah.
The 9th was
okay. 4-9 it is.
We just have one more item of business to...
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Meeting.